I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors first, my postdoc, Bob, and my graduate student, June, and also Jim Doolittle, good collaborator working for NRCS. The project is funded by USDA and National Science Foundation. Just very brief introduction. As we know, understanding very complex subsurface heterogeneity and their relationships to soil moisture, spatial temporal patterns, and also the process related to preferential flow in the field are fundamental to hill slope and catchment hydrology. But despite significant progress that made in the past decades or so, our ability to predict three-dimensional preferential flow patterns, thresholds, and pathways in the subsurface across space and time remains limited. So our study here was part of the a larger project that we are doing at the Shell Hills catchment from the hydropetrological perspective, trying to understand the fundamental processes of landscape water flux at multiple scales and to link such process to the patterns that we can recognize from soil moisture monitoring and to link that to soil landscape features. So basically, we are interested in connecting these three scales. Admittedly, this is not an easy task, as we know. But nevertheless, the recognition that the catchment is a science in which all processes are preferential is intriguing and also challenging about traditional way of doing modeling of flow and transport in a subsurface. So here's a fundamental question we need to ask ourselves. Is continuous field or discrete object kind of approach most suitable for modeling subsurface flow? I'd like to quote a couple of sources to illustrate the point. Like in GIS data model, using continuous field versus discrete object distinction, that distinction provides a useful framework for the discussion of flow dynamics. In fact, traditionally, hydrological processes are generally conceptualized within the field domain, like we all know Navier-Stokes equation and Darcy's law. It's a quote from Michael Chart, a well-known GIS and hydrologist, in fact. The second one is from Kwasi, the science plane, where it says, classical hydrology has applied findings from fluid mechanics together with the necessary institutive relations to develop sets of governing equations, pretty much like in atmospheric science and ocean science. But as we know, land subsurface heterogeneities, like many porous medias, and also the hydrological structures that we observe in the landscape and the soils, plus surface roughness and channel geometries, things like that, they all make the land surface and subsurface different from the continuous field assumption. So the solid earth, the point here is, the solid earth is not a continuous fluid. Rather, it is it poses hydrological heterogeneities with discrete flow networks embedded in both surface and subsurface. So based on that kind of understanding of our preliminary studies, here's the hypothesis we try to test. That is, it appears that in many hill slopes and many catchments, an internal network structure exists in the subsurface, which governs vertical, both vertical and lateral preferential flow dynamics and the threshold-like hydrological response under varying precipitation input, soil conditions, and antecedent moisture conditions. So we embark this kind of study in this 7.5 and 9 hectare forested catchment not too far from Penn State campus. And to start with, we map out detailed soil distribution and also the landforms as illustrated here with five soil series identified, mostly in septic soils, young soils derived from the shelf rock, and also a couple of office source with clay accumulation in the B horizons. And then the four landforms, particularly point out those topographically speaking hollows or depressional areas that geologically is kind of unique in many aspects. So to begin with, a few years back, we did a lot of in-situ observations, which intuitively give us understanding what's going on in the catchments. As you see from those photos that along the hill slope, from the top to the bottom, you do see a lot of phenomena that, particularly during the storms, when it rains hard, you observed that water seep out through the fractured rock or coming out of these chimney bottles when it's wet, it just bubbling, and then doing big stones, you dug a little bit, and then you see water seeping out at the bottom of the hill slope. And near stream, there's some return flow, but this kind of surface return flow only occur when it really rain hard, like this kind of event during Hurricane Ivan in 2004. So we have video record of the water seeping out of this interface between A and B horizon interface. As zooming in here, and this kind of flow phenomenon is supported by the measured K-set values. As you can see, the horizontal ones are much higher than the vertical K-set values. We also done a lot of geophysical investigations to understand area-wide subsurface structure or heterogeneity, as illustrated here in a sphere. This is orthogonal to its long axis. All right, and you can see that the three soil series distribute along this kind of sphere catena, and also the beds of the shear alluvium. Just a couple more examples illustrating the difference between this concave hill slope versus this linear or convex hill slope in terms of subsurface heterogeneity and the soil type distributions. So based on over 200 in-situ observations plus ground penetrating radar imaging, we developed this depth to bedrock for the entire catchment. And that kind of information is very helpful for our design and understanding of the subsurface hydrology. Also biogeochemical type of study and geomorphological studies. And that's why we have this little catchment heavily instrumented in the past 5 years or so. Kind of busy slide here, apparently, that we have a lot of things there. Basically, those stars are the ones that we have automatic monitoring stations installed, which I will show you some of the data. And then we have also those color bars are the manually collected sites where we have soil moisture and the soil potential, water potential and the water table, things like that, and temperature. And then we have this triangular design of this what we call ETR. That's evaporation, transpiration, and recharge sensor array, and also a weather station here. And this new couple of transects of lysimeters and biogeochemical studies. So this is not just my group's work at Penn State, it's interdisciplinary effort with many researchers at Penn State. And this site happens to be the one that this year selected by NSF as one of the first three national critical zone observatories. So in the next 5 years, we see a lot of work going on here. But let me share with you some of the data that we have collected here to illustrate the subsurface flow network that I'm trying to highlight. I'm now presenting just some manually collected data from those sites colored by the bars, vertical bars. And the first thing I can easily show you is this slope intercept analysis of linear regression using time series data. Proposed by Chernovsky and Dijon a while back. Basically, using these A and B values, the slope and the intercept, you can further classify the so-called temporal stability of monitoring sites ranking in terms of relative wet and dry into four conditions. The first one is basically no change, and the second one is uniform change, and the third and the fourth one non-uniform or preferential flow related change. So if you believe that gives you some clue about potential preferential flow, and you look at a data set like this, and you see a lot of highlighted in red ones indicating that the preferential flow might occur in that catchment. Now let me, using the real-time data to pinpoint what's going on exactly, using these seven stations that we have along three transects, essentially up and down the hill slope. And here is a layout, kind of illustrating what we have put on the ground in each of the stations. Basically, multiple arrays of sensors. This one is Decagon's brand new metric probe that we beta test, but also Echo 5 and Campbell's 229 probes installed by soil horizons and their interfaces. Now we have this one facing upslope area and adjacent to that, this one facing the side slope to the left. So we have replicates like that trying to capture the flow directions from the three-dimensional perspective. And kind of busy slide again, but point is very simple. We have 7 sites as shown here, but some with replicates, so total 12 stations. And those blue locations are the sensor locations. All right, the white colors are the actual installation depth of the sensor, in this case Echo 5. And then the green ones to the right is the response time after this particular rainfall event in 2006 that started at 6:38 a.m. and stopped about 10 hours later. And the first response showing the quick or sharp jump in moisture content recorded by the data logger, and so recorded in these green colors or the other colors in terms of response time of the sensor. Two simple features to illustrate the preferential flow. One is that there are some response times, like those colored in red, they respond earlier than the sensors above them. All right. So apparently, water must have passed through the overlying soils to get to the lower part. And then the second one is that if you compare all the sensors installed at about 40 centimeter depth across this catchment, they show very different response times. So we're now in the process of sorting out all those response time sequence in trying to figure out the flow network. Now, let me give you a specific example of the real-time data recorded, like this site 51, located in the middle of the hill slope. And if you look at this BC horizon, the sensors installed at 68 centimeter horizon, at this time shows a sharp increase in moisture content. But the horizons above and below it did not have that response. So that's a fairly simple, intuitively understandable preferential flow dynamics. And we also install a probe inside a fractured shear rock, like this one. And if you look at the real-time record of that sensor response in this blue, you can see that in a relatively drier period of last year, it shows this response to the rainfall events, but not the horizons above them. So the water must have come from the side slope or upslope area and through the lateral movement getting to there. Interestingly, there are a lot of spatial variability, although this is also mapped as Weicker soil. This CR horizon sensor there did not have the similar response like the previous one, also mapped as a Weicker soil. But you can see the variability of the soil right there. Now, here's another site that shows how the response time in the sea horizon being earlier than the horizon above it, that is BC and sea interface, about 9 minutes earlier. But the water, basically water come from the upslope or the side slope area and reach this sensor location, and then that big pulse of water moving upwards, reaching the saturation, which is a plateau for about 2.5 hours. But that water table also rises up to this upper sensor and cause that to saturate for half an hour as well, but then water drop down very quickly. However, the water in the sea horizon stands for another 2 hours before it drops. And so we have lots of these kind of instances to illustrate how the water moves across the catchment in different soil types and landscape positions. And one more illustration, and then I will wrap up. That is this very full horizon soil site 15 also had interesting response in the full sea at 1 meter depth, that after 1 day of the rain, it suddenly showed a quick jump in terms of moisture response, but the horizon above it did not. And then another day later, without any further rain, it showed a second response. All right, excuse me, forget that for now. It showed a second response, and that basically indicated the arrival of the water from the hill slope reaching that very floor, and then the water table moving upward, if you see the response time going from the bottom up to the surface, that illustrates the movement of the groundwater from the bottom up. And if you look at the saturation through the plateau of moisture content versus total porosity, it's about 90% and not 100% saturation. So basically, we have some what's called threshold response in this catchment hydrology. Illustrated here are two examples. One is that in the R horizon I show you in the Weicker soil, that response time after the rainfall starts versus the maximum rain intensity, it shows this kind of threshold behavior. And we have quite a few like that illustrations, but I will skip in the interest of time. So Overall, we have identified main flow pathways down this hill slope, four of them illustrated here. Many of them are along the interfaces of soil horizons or soil bedrock interfaces. And interestingly, that kind of hydrology will feed back to how the soil evolves or soil catena develops, and that's illustrated in terms of soil profile features that we observed. So we now try to develop a flow network model for these catchments, and this is a summarized of dominant subsurface flow pathways in a catchment. The top two rows are the landform and then the soil type from the hilltop to the bottom, and then the first two columns are the initial moisture condition and then rainfall input conditions. So we basically identify five different preferential flow dynamics, and we are adding the sixth one right now, that is the flow through the fractured rock, and trying to map this out using different colors, but eventually to put in this kind of network model to illustrate how we might utilize concepts like Lloyd Sider sitting in the audience in terms of different nodes in a network that could be utilized in terms of mapping the flow network. And we are going to use geophysical investigations to guide us not to randomly assign the preferential flow pathways, but rather to pinpoint based on our soil and landscape investigations to pick up more realistic flow pathways. So I'm closing by mentioning these two take-home messages. One is that apparently subsurface preferential flow is about everywhere in this particular catchment. And internal network structure exists in the hill slope that governs vertical and lateral preferential flow dynamics and a threshold-like response under different conditions. Thank you.
Well, our next talk is kind of canceled, so we have some time for discussion, and if you have any questions for Henry, we can do that also.
Yeah, separately out, obviously, from this kind of institute, so much monitoring is not enough to, but we do have a lot of ancillary other observations and studies. So, like one of my concluding slide shows that we identified different processes, many four of them, right? One is the flow through the A and B horizon interface, and then and the second one is the soil and bedrock interface. The third one is the pipes, they are referring to the macro poles created by either loop channels or chimomboros, all right, the little animals that make a lot of bigger holes that during big storms, it pipes a lot of water down a hill slope, and that's very realistic as we observed many times. And then the fourth one is that, you know, as the water accumulated along a hill slope, the pressure builds up, and then the pressure gets so high enough that it will have to be released, like a valve turning on and off. So when that pressure builds up and the valve is turning on, that is, the water will show up in the toe slope area in on the surface. We call return flow. So that's kind of major preferential processes that we have in that catchment.
I just have one quick question. So you are considering the lateral topography is more important than the vertical heterogeneity?
It's hard to say which one is more important in terms of vertical and horizontal. Both are important and they are interconnected, and that's the point that we try to make. How do we understand this kind of three-dimensional network that that's going on there? And so let the...
I have a question.
Oh, okay.
I mean, wouldn't you then just conclude that the morphology of that area could have told you what the hydrology was going to be?
Not enough. They are providing some clues, and that we certainly want to utilize about how we can tier the dynamics of hydrology in the catchment through soil profile morphological features. But they are subject to where they are located in terms of the landscape location and rainfall inputs. Big rain or small storms, oh no, small rain or big storms and there's no male period. So they do have a lot of dynamics. So they have some traces and general features, but in terms of predicting the dynamics, we need to look at more beyond just morphology.
Right, but I mean, you were talking about how the deeper the DW, they indicated the water was going deeper before it moved laterally.
It accumulated the clays or the materials that has over time accumulated in the very floor, and that's basically the indication of the water accumulating
right.
towards the very floor, diffracting in the soil morphology. Yeah.
So I guess my point was is that you were talking about trying to develop a three-dimensional model, but maybe the looking at layers and soil formation could help you.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Definitely, we certainly want to utilize that as one of the background information that we have. Yeah.
Thank you.
Another question.
Yes.
How steep is the, what's the average slope on those sites
oh.
that you have?
Okay. I didn't mention that. We have slopes up to like 48%, so pretty steep slopes.
So that's how I want to come back to the question that I asked you at the beginning. I mean,
well, slope definitely is a very significant controlling factor there, but that's not the only one. There are different soil types and different geometry of the landform. They all make a difference. Like the same slope, if it's concave versus convex, if it's a Weicker shallow soil versus the Rushton deep soil, they have different flow dynamics going on with the similar slopes. Well, that certainly is one of major factors. We try to also point out other factors, modifying on top of that.